Kiran Sahota was what the world liked to call an average student. I think that's what they call the kids that get C's at school. You know, the ones that get labelled as being dreamers. Like dreaming is a bad thing. I don't know if she would have dreamt about Cliff Richard giving her some life-changing advice. Probably not, because she didn't even know who Sir Cliff Richard was when she was told she was going to meet him.
I kind of knew because my grandmother and my mother used to say summer holiday, but other people knew him. I was a big fan of like Blind Date and Surprise, Surprise. Mm-hmm. And I knew he was Cilla Black's friend. Right. So I asked more questions
about title, Cliff Richard, Cilla Black's best friend. Yeah.
But I love him dearly.
You're probably thinking, where the hell did Sir Cliff Richard come from?
And he was really, really nice. And he gave me some advice. And I never thought I'd go into this service, and here we are. So that's how it happened.
This is a story about how chance encounters and being curious can lead dreamers to places that they never even dreamt about. When Kiran was in her 20s, her grandma was diagnosed with esophagus cancer. Kiran's whole world had changed as she became a young carer. She looked after her grandma from her cancer diagnosis until the day she took her last breath. Kiran saw that esophagus cancer was a silent killer. She didn't understand why people weren't talking about it more, especially in her community. So she decided to step in and work on raising awareness about it within South Asian communities. Fast forward to 2012, when London was gearing up for an Olympic summer. Kiran got a call from someone saying that she'd been chosen to become an Olympic torchbearer.
And they said, hi, you're going to meet Cliff Richard and you're going to go to Cannoneer Park and do the closing ceremony. And I was like, what? Where? How? When?
She thought it must have been her brother playing a prank on her and hung up. The phone rang again. The man she was speaking to, who wasn't her brother, told her someone had put an application in for her. Who would have done that? Turns out, it was her sister, nominating her for her services to education. You know what? I think I like the sound of this family. So Kiran gets told she's going to carry the Olympic torch with Sir Cliff Richard. He ends up giving her a little bit of life-changing advice and a social enterprise specialising in South Asian history called Believe in Me CIC is born.
Believe in Me was born because otherwise people are just calling me, can you do this, can you do that? And what Sir Cliff Richard said is, you need an organisation people can contact you and also find out more about the stuff you're doing because it's word of mouth and some people will miss it. So that's how it came about. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he was going to insert me into the history sector.
Becoming a heritage and education consultant at a national lottery-funded charity was never on Kiran's agenda. She'd been a teacher before, she'd done youth work and worked with the prison service. She even made her way into the corporate world. But the history thing kind of started with meeting Cliff Richard. Remember the BLM protest in Bristol when a slave trader statue was thrown into a river? That was about people coming together to eradicate a part of history that they were ashamed of. We all get taught history at school, but it's usually one side of the story. Believe in Me uncovers untold stories of British South Asian history, and it works with young people of South Asian heritage on after-school projects, educating them about their history in ways that some of your teachers could never. Kiran takes students outside of the classroom and their comfort zones to visit archives and historical places to explore South Asian stories that pretty much no one knows about. Places like the Chatree Memorial Site in Brighton for Sikh and Hindu soldiers, and Woken Peace Garden, where Muslim soldiers are remembered. Believe in Me's latest national lottery-funded programme, South Asian Women in War, plans on changing the narrative when it comes to South Asian women in history. Kiran's been working with a team of young people to explore the impact of the Second World War on Indian women. They'll be making a documentary that's based on their findings that's going to go on a national tour. So these hidden histories won't be so hidden anymore. You already know how Cliff Richard played his role in Kieran's story, but David Cameron and Kieran's curiosity played a part as well.
During the centenary of First World War 2014 and 2018, David Cameron, who was Prime Minister at the time, was saying communities need to be involved in learning about their history. And coming from corporate and schooling, we don't get taught this history. And I was like, well, what's he talking about? Mm-hmm. And I saw a news article about an Indian soldier. And I was like, well, we know about Wilfred Owen poetry. Do Indian soldiers have poetry?
Kieran decided to start her investigation at home with our granddad.
My granddad was starting to get dementia at that time. And he remembered partition in 1947 when India had to be divided. And apart from partition stories, I was like, well, who went in First World War? Did anyone come from our village? He's like, I couldn't tell you. And if Google couldn't help us, I was like, how does Google not know the answer?
I'm really into finding out more about my own family history. I know that my grandparents were one of the first West Indian families to move into Newcastle. And there's a documentary out there with both of them talking about it. But that's all I've got.
I started asking people, putting it out on internet, like using social media. And then I got landed into letters to war studies in different universities in Birmingham. Nobody replied. I think I got one email. I can see you in 3 months, but you've got 10 minutes of my time. And then they cancelled that appointment. And so it was disheartening. I was like, how difficult is it after you finished university and you've gone into work? Mm-hmm. The libraries can't help me. Some historians didn't want to help. They closed the door. But why can't we learn about our own history? And where do we go? And here is our Prime Minister saying communities get involved.
How? Yeah. How
you make it sound so easy. Yeah. And then I realised, like, with my friends, we were like, well, let's just find out. Like, mm-hmm. One day I woke up and I said, hi, is everyone interested? Should we find out? Mm-hmm. And it literally was the six of us around a coffee table going, let's find out. And then I was introduced to Dr. Nicola Gold. And I was like, I've got this dream, basically. And she started putting call-outs out, even though this wasn't her specialised area. She was like, let me just help you because I am a doctor. And I realised that when you're from an education institution, people respond to you. But if you're the everyday person, no one responds. And then I called up a professor at Hull University, Dr. David Omisi. Never thought he'd pick up the phone. And he said, what are you after and what can I help you with? And I said, I just want to know this. And he said, get yourself to the British Library, sign up for a members card and yeah, get the boxes. And I thought there was going to be one or two boxes. And there was thousands, but nothing to do with my family.
Yeah.
Just thousands of soldiers writing to each other, to their families. And some were like heartbreaking stories. And I was like, oh my God, I stumbled across something and I want to share.
Yeah.
So what do we do now?
So Kieran decided to put on a little show. The last time she did history might have been in year 9, but that didn't stop her. Kieran grew up going to museums and exhibitions, so she kind of had a rough idea of what she was doing. She managed to get National Lottery funding and put on her first exhibition called Honouring Indian Victoria Cross Soldiers in World War I. It told the stories of 11 men who were Indian Victoria Cross winners using some of the letters she had found. So the Victoria Cross is a big deal. It's the highest military gallantry award for a soldier, and a mouthful to say. Until 1911, the Victoria Cross could only be awarded to British soldiers. But that year, it was opened up to South Asian soldiers of the British Indian Army for the first time. You know how I said I wanted to find out about my family's history? I wouldn't have the faintest clue on where to start. I have no idea how to get an exhibition going. And even if I did, then the nerves would kick in. Because what if nobody wants to show up or no one cares? But Kieran handled it. She felt like Carrie Bradshaw in Sex and the City. Not and just like that.
We don't talk about and just like that.
If it hasn't got Samantha in it, I don't want to know.
You know when they're in New York, it's just four friends. Let's figure life out. Yeah. And each friend is very different. So when I came up to my first project and I was working full time, it was a bit like Sex and the City. Let's roll the dice. Let's see where it goes. No one was taking us seriously as well.
Yeah.
I don't think people take us seriously now. But, you know, it was like, who is she? She's an imposter. You know, you've got no PhD. You've got no MA. and you want to do a what? You want to do an exhibition? You want to go where? You want to launch in a museum and you're having a joke. And me and my friends thought it was funny because we knew our families would support us. We were like, if we needed people to attend just to make it look like it's busy, can you make... And my mum was like, yeah, I'll get you on a rotor. But that's, you know, in Sex and the City, they're always having fun and they talk about issues. Mm-hmm. And that's how it came about. So when people were coming, they were like, oh, we heard about it on the radio, or they heard about it through social media. The 3-month run was so successful, but unfortunately, just because another exhibition was due to be in our place, we couldn't extend it. We got a call out from other areas to say, come here, we'll pay for everything and get yourself here. And we were like, okay, well, let's just take the journey and milk it.
I read that you said history is a man's field.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that, though?
When we think of history, we can think of like so many poems written by men.
Yeah.
But where's the women's stories? When I was entering the field back in 2014, 2015, it was men running men's project. Mm-hmm. And even in my area, I didn't want to start my own project. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be involved in something. They were saying, oh, yeah, you can come and just do like 2 hours. But when it comes for pictures, you're not allowed there. Or they weren't taking us to like research centres. And I said, well, why are we not doing that?
Yeah.
And it was a man's field. And I think this is what annoyed them. How is a woman telling men's stories and how is she doing it so successfully? And I didn't know that. Because we, like I said, me and my friends were like, oh, it's, no one's ever going to come. But then when people started pouring in and mm-hmm. started taking us seriously, like, actually, we came for you and we're glad it's not run by men. And that's their words, not my words. It changed the game and also changed my perspective and mm-hmm. how I should be delivering it. And yeah, I wasn't going to let any man stop me, and I never have let any man stop me. So let's change the game, and I hope more women get into this field and start speaking.
They say that if you dare to speak your wishes out loud, the universe hears you. I think it might have heard Kieran when she said she wanted more women to get into the history sector. Enter Teba Akil.
You know, with my future and my degree and Kieran, I think they're all interlinked and they're all sort of helping me grow as a person.
What can I tell you about Teva? I can tell you that at one point of our life, she was shy and quiet. She loved books, even the ones that got made into film trilogies, like The Hunger Games and Maze Runner, and she loved history. But it was a bit of an undercover love. It was kind of a secret. Teva took history as a GCSE, but she didn't have the confidence to take the next step with it and do it as an A-level. She was getting bored of learning about the same thing over and over again. And she didn't know anyone who studied history or got themselves a job off the back of it. So she decided to keep things simple and study law. I know law isn't simple, but for Teva, it was way more straightforward than picking history. It was safe. She knew she could get a job afterwards, no matter how competitive it may be. And being South Asian, Teba decided that law was what was expected of her. That was until she was 16 and Kieran walked into her life. Kieran was like, do you want to learn about South Asian history? And Teba's exact words were, but I don't do A-level history. The response she got was that it didn't matter. So she started going on trips with Kieran, and the next thing you know, she's changing her degree and personal statements. See you later, law. Oh, hi, history. How you doing?
For me, my idea of history was sort of male, just white-focused history.
Yeah.
And then Kieran came along, and there's this young woman who's come along and said, we've always been a majority female staff. Okay, come along to these projects. And then that's what the main thing's been about. And that really inspired me, because that completely removed what my stereotypical image of historian was. And I was like, okay, this is possible. And I know that I need to work hard, but I can do this. And so because of Kieran, that gave me the little push.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I decided, you know what? I'm going to get out of this little safety bubble that I've created for myself. Yeah. And I'm going to pursue history as a degree.
Teva's 20 now, and she's studying history and politics at university. She'd never even seen a female historian before until Kieran stepped into her life. And what that meant to her was everything.
I remember my first history class, they were like, okay, just draw an image of what you think a historian looks like. I was the only one that drew female. Everyone else drew male. And I was like, oh, and my lecturer was like, why have you drawn a female? I was like, well, you know, I've always been surrounded by females. I've been surrounded by Kieran. I've been surrounded by other female historians, other female staff, film crew. And then everyone else was like, oh, no, we just think of these men just in suits in a library. And I was like, I don't think that at all. Before I might have, but not now.
Did you find that had an impact on your decision making of when, like, it is a man's world and it is going to be more challenging to get your foot in the door or do what you want to do?
Yeah, I think because I've always been surrounded with Kieran, I've had this idea that, you know what, maybe I can do this, but I do understand, like Kieran said, it is still a man's world. And
yeah,
it's like, I need to like really work hard, especially, you know, person of colour, a young person as well. You know, you don't see that much diversity in the heritage or history sector. And it's like, okay, well, if no one else is going to do it, I might as well step up and work hard and sort of be like, you know, help along, be the little diverse person.
I love this attitude. This is like my vibe completely. Yeah, absolutely love it.
Kieran didn't plan on working with young people. It just kind of happened. Six formers and first year uni students who were checking out her exhibition would go up to her and give her their ideas. They straight up told her that they wanted to be involved if she did a second project. So what was she going to say? No, I don't think that's Kieran's style. She didn't advertise to work with schools either. When she did her exhibition at Birmingham Museum and Art Gallery, she left her number there and the phone just didn't stop ringing. Young people in schools would be calling to say that they wanted to work with her. You know how when people say you just need to get out there when you're dating? Kieran was out there big time. One thing she did decide to do was to keep her projects with young people in Birmingham. Things could get a little London-centric in the history world, with the museums, the archives, and the libraries all being there. Kieran knew what the deal was for young people coming from places that were written off as being low income with barely any opportunities. A lot of the six formers Kieran was working with had never left Birmingham. They hadn't even been outside of Smethwick. Kieran knew Smethwick was remembered for all the things it shouldn't be, like the gun crime, instead of the amazing people she was working with. Kieran was ready to change people's take on that.
People wrote me off all the time. You know, she lives in La La Land, or she's a dreamer and she's going to do this and that. They never took me seriously. And some of the teachers didn't take me seriously. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want that. I see young people now and they're like, can you just help us? But, you know, we come from broken families sometimes.
Yeah.
And who are they going to ask? I'm very lucky my family helped me and supported me. Mm-hmm. They just couldn't help me academically because they had not gone to university. So for the young people, when they reach out, it was like, okay, let's give them a chance and let's see what their potential is. Because it might not be reading and writing, but they're very good at art.
Yeah.
And expressing themselves. So let's help them do that. So that's how it came. It never was meant to be this. I say that in a good way. It's never meant to be this. But once I started, I just couldn't stop.
Yeah.
And it works both ways because they teach me a makeup skill, you know, and I let them have their say. And then I said, well, should we just stop and shall I teach you a little bit about history and why you're here today?
So now I've listened to you. You have to listen to me.
Tabor's ready to step up, take up space and take her place in history. Kieran made her way into the history world without a history degree. She went for English literature instead. I didn't go to uni. It ended up just not being for me. I wasn't very academic and I didn't want to do another 3 years of studying. I couldn't have thought of anything worse. But I actually did apply and I got accepted. But instead of going, I took a year out and then I went to work with my auntie in the salon. My original plan was just that I wanted to have loads of money and have my own business and be a CEO. But then I got a little message from a reality TV show. So the uni and business plans sort of went down the drain. Education was always seen as a privilege in Kieran's family. Her grandparents were illiterate and they wanted better for her.
And my granddad used to say to me, you know, you've got a free education here, just use it. And yeah, I mean, I loved Henry VIII at school. I love, how does a man have so many wives? And I remember my teacher saying, you really are passionate about this. That's the bit of, you know, history I remember.
Yeah.
And then if we think about war, I just remember, you know, Wilfred Owen poem. But the rest of it, why I'm so passionate and where it came from, mm-hmm. is because why can't we make it accessible? Mm-hmm. And why do certain, you know, groups only have access to archives? Why can't I have archives? And also my background, I've worked with women like in higher education who were stopped. They couldn't go any further. And I think with my own life as well, like I keep repeating, sometimes education was blocked for me. And when I saw the doors closing, when I just mentioned, like in my first project, I wanted to learn more.
Yeah.
And people closing the doors, I was like, well, hang on a minute, you're the experts.
Mm-hmm.
why are you closing the door on me? Like, I want to share it with everybody.
Yeah.
I'm also reaching an audience that you can't reach. Yeah. And I think academics forgot that.
Mm-hmm.
I understand it and I'm bilingual. I speak Punjabi. I can translate way in places you can't translate. And that's mm-hmm. why I've become more passionate about making it accessible, because nothing should be shut.
Do you think that people were doing it on purpose, like the academics and the people with the PhDs? I can't understand why they wouldn't just want to give the information freely.
Because history is seen as an elitist subject.
Right.
You know, certain people have access to it because it's like who rules the narrative. And there's nothing wrong with saying, let's tell it from the British side. I'm not saying that's yeah. wrong. We live in the UK and that's fine. If you're talking about then Commonwealth contribution, which I talk about all the time, you need to add those facts in. And because we weren't taught that at school, it's made us more hungry. And it's made me more hungry to learn that. Yeah, of course, we're going to have upsetting stories. But we need to know where we come from, because we don't go back to India and Pakistan. There's young people I know that don't go back, don't know about their lineage. So why are we shutting the doors when we just want to know about us
mm-hmm.
and make us feel like, okay, now I get the picture. But the more they hide it or the more they shut the doors, it makes us shout louder. And mm-hmm. I think people are coming together. And I love that. there's a movement coming.
Yeah.
And I can feel it. And I'm loving where we are today. Where people are saying, well, no, actually, we want to ask this question and we want to know more, and let's open the archives. Mm-hmm. And that's my job, and I absolutely love it.
One thing about Kiran, she loves pink lipstick. If she's in a makeup shop and she finds a shade she likes, she'll buy 5 of them at once and do a little stock take. So when she gives history lectures, she rocks that pink lipstick. And that little pop of colour really seems to offend people. Apparently, you're not supposed to wear pink lipstick when you give history lectures. The critics also say she's dumbing down history.
Do I still have people that don't like my work? Yeah, of course. And do I care? No, I still go to sleep
that
the same way.
That means you're doing something right, though, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. And if it annoys you, then you're not doing it right. And I'm not telling anything new, Amber. The archives are there. I think I'm just telling it in a different way, and I'm telling it to a different audience. I'm just making everything transparent. You're always going to have critics. Yeah. And if we don't have critics, like Cardi B says, it's shame on you, you know? I still win.
Exactly.
And that's not egotistical, but I can't afford to let them get in my head.
Mm-hmm. If this was Coachella and Kiran was running it, she would put South Asian women on as the headline act. She doesn't run Coachella yet. So instead, they're headlining her third project, Indian Women and War. It's a bold move because she's always said that a history project focusing on South Asian women would be risky.
Whether it's South Asian women or women in general,
mm-hmm.
in history, the narratives don't draw to women. During my last project, Journey from Home, I came across letters where men were comparing, this was Indian soldiers,
yeah.
they were comparing Indian women to European women. So that's women that they saw in France and when they were in Brighton Hospital. Comparing, you know, we saw this white lady and she can read. And I was like, well, why are men talking about women? Where's the response for women?
Yeah.
And there was no response. And that was First World War. And there's little evidence on women, especially women of colour. When Lottery Fund said, are you going to do another project? And I was like, well, I've got to do something about women.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, well, I've heard about like Noor and Ayat Khan, but that's Second World War. So shall I take a risk and go Second World War if you can't find evidence from First? And that's where the linkage came. So in First World War, British women will always be talked about because they were photographed more.
Yeah.
We might not know their names, but they're working in the factories. And a lot of my history is of cross heritage and ethnicity. So in our last project, we talked about a Jewish soldier from London who then went to the Indian Army.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got photographs of Indian soldiers with French soldiers working together.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see if we do that in with women. So that's what moved me to South Asian women. But it was risky because we're just coming out of the First World War narrative mm-hmm. where it's all about men.
Mm-hmm.
And then the focus was on Princess Sofia Dilip Singh, a woman of privilege, but changed so much for South Asian women and, you know, having the right to vote and using her platform. And I was like, okay, well, let's just go for Second World War. It's something I'm not familiar with. I wasn't familiar with it at that time.
Yeah.
But I read every book. I made sure I went to every archive. And I was like, well, this is where the story leads. And I said, well, let's just roll the dice again. and let's just go for it.
Yeah. Kiran is a Spice Girls fan, and it shows. Her latest project, Indian Women in War, is giving girl power. And it's the first project of its kind.
So it's the first time a project like this has ever been funded.
Yeah.
This is the trickiest one.
It's the first time current personnel from the Ministry of Defence and Armed Forces are working with a community project. It's also a first for an Indian woman to be leading on. This one is all about women's contributions to the Army, Royal Air Force and the Navy.
So we're working with Ministry of Defence and interviewing currently the South Asian women serving in Army, Air Force and Navy.
Mm-hmm.
So we're connecting the past to the present. So this is the first time it's been funded because most projects look at women, but where there's more evidence, and here the archives are hard to get to.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know it was going to be that challenging. And we're talking about the story of that Noor Anayat Khan, who during Second World War was the special operative executive, and she was flown into France and of Muslim heritage. She was a radio operative, and it's a dangerous job because they only had a 6-week life expectancy.
Oh my God.
And she outdid most people, and she was about to return to London when actually her cover was blown.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was arrested, and on the 13th of September 1944, she was executed, shot in the back of her head. And we don't know these stories. And that's Second World War, so let alone, you know, First World War.
Yeah.
And was like, well, where are the other women in the Army and the Navy? And no, we don't have many names in those stories,
mm-hmm.
which is a shame. So we've been taking the names that we have and the pictures that we got to build this picture.
Mm-hmm.
And then we forget today as well in the armed forces, the South Asian women serving today, whatever our views are of Army or armed forces or whatever. But there's people that give up their lives to do this job. And so it was exciting because they're like from my community.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, how come I never see you? Where have you been? They're like, where have you been? But we've been filming in, you know, hangars and RAF bases in naval ports. And it's so great because when am I ever going to be on a fighter jet? you know, and it's all been fun and grace, but they understand because they didn't know this history neither.
Yeah.
And if we don't know, how are we expected, you know, for the next generation to know? So that was really important. So yeah, we're collaborating and it's all women together.
Which we love.
Which I love. I'm hoping that they give me a uniform as well.
Yeah.
Got to speak to Minister of Defence about that.
Kiran hasn't got her uniform from the Ministry of Defence yet. Noor Anayat Khan had an impact on Tabor in a way that no other historical figure has. Kiran runs a book club where they read a book about her called The Spy Princess. Tabor loved it. She found out that Noor was a quiet child, just like she was.
I remember one thing in the book that I really loved is the fact that they used to do these mock interrogations and they were like, oh, she's not going to last. Look how she's shaking. She's so scared. But near the end, how she passed away was that she was caught in a cell and she was interrogated and she stood strong
mm-hmm.
throughout all that. And you just see the stark contrast and it's like incredibly inspiring. And, you know, I learned that she has a statue here in London as well.
Yeah.
And it's just this empowering woman mm-hmm. that I'm reading about.
This was the woman that was supposed to last 6 weeks.
And she ended up longer than 6 weeks. And yeah, it's just an amazing story. And I think with the kids coming from like Sikh backgrounds and, you know, being Muslim and Hindu,
mm-hmm.
there are women in our community. So I'm so glad that you kind of resonate with that and learn more about your heritage and women of your heritage as well that contributed to war.
It just shows how much history we have no idea about. I really enjoyed history at school, but it felt very heavily Eurocentric and just nothing else. I always felt like it was quite disjointed and that there were missing pieces. And I distinctly remember that we had one lesson on Afro-Caribbean history and then it was never spoken about again. So what's the deal with how history is taught in schools? Shouldn't we all be able to learn about our collective history?
When it comes to how we're taught in schools, British history is laid bare, whereas when we were finding out about South Asian history and also Black history,
mm-hmm.
and when you're from a mixed heritage, you're kind of like, oh, I didn't know this, and you're piecing it back together because racial tensions were there back then as well. And people forget that it's never been easy. So piecing it all together, we're catching up. So by the time David Cameron had said communities get involved, we were only beginning to find out. So we're 100 years too late.
Yeah.
And we're now putting, I call it like a jigsaw piece. We're putting all the pieces together. And there's some pieces that you will find. There's some pieces that I will find. But if we're not talking to each other,
how will anyone know?
Yeah. Can more be done in schools? Of course it can. And I know some great teachers who want to bring change in, but every time we're a step forward, we take 10 steps back.
Yeah.
It's never right. And history is never nice. You know, South Asian history has always been troubled, from First World War wanting independence, Second World War wanting independence. Then we had independence and partition came, and it wasn't the way that we wanted. So it's always left a sour taste. But we're not taught those bits in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's causing this huge shift in people's attitude. Why don't we learn this?
Why do you think South Asian women get overlooked in British history? Why do you think that's a thing?
Because there's no names. Yeah. There's no names. Like, I've pulled out thousands of images, and I'm very lucky to have access to private collections as well. There's thousands of images, no names, no villages. Mm-hmm. There's just women in saris, and we won't ever know them. And it makes me sad, because that could have been my grandmother. And these women, they contributed to a war, and yet they're forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And yet men come out the heroes. And that's nothing against men, because I love men. You know, I love, you know, let's be honest, you know, it's not men bashing, but, you know, men, even if there's no name, they will remember what regiment it is, or they'll remember the location. They were in Paris, or they were here, they were there. And we go full force for men, but we don't come out full force for women.
Mm-hmm.
I know these women look like the women in my family. I was like, well, I don't care what anyone's going to say. Let's just go for it. We've got the funding. Let's go and tell these stories. Even if we don't know their names, I want to make sure that I represent them. If any relative came out and said, you know that picture, that's a relative of mine.
Yeah.
I've done them justice. Otherwise, why did they contribute?
I think that having names is important, but I think generally it's just good to know about the impact, because I think it was something like around 16,000 West Indians volunteered for the World War II on British behalf. And I wouldn't know that without doing a little bit of research, and I don't know any of the names, but it's just nice for me to know that in my heart. Like, now I know that. So that was the impact that my family had on both sides in the past as well.
Mm. And you have to remember, most of this research is coming from community groups, and it's not coming from academic centres. We probably have the support of academic centres, but it's everyday people like me and you researching something. But then we get to a level where it's kind of stopped, because we don't know where else we can reach.
Mm-hmm.
We don't ever get these platforms neither. So what do? It just stays in our area. So if you're from, I don't know, from Shoreditch, sometimes your project will only stay in Shoreditch.
Yeah.
We all need to work together to bring it to a platform and showcase these stories and present this to a wider audience and see how they like it.
Tabor's high school experience of history didn't include the war efforts of women. In 2022, in a world where social change movements are hard to keep up with, you would think that what gets taught at school would change to reflect on those movements.
But it sounds like nothing's changed. Some of the kids, they don't know they were women spies, and they don't know there were people of colour involved in this, and they held such important roles in history. Because kids aren't learning about this now,
mm-hmm.
I feel like they won't understand, and they won't, like me, resonate with these historical figures, because I feel such a link towards her, and I feel like that's what kids need. They need this little role model,
mm-hmm.
and they're not getting it now, to be honest.
And do you think that's because women in history are just sort of overlooked?
Yes, definitely. I don't think they're talked about, to be honest. When I learned about soldiers and I learned about spies, I saw male figures on the screen.
And that was it?
Yep, on the posters all around the school, on the whiteboard, men.
I think the only thing that I heard about women was that they had to stay home to help fight for the country, and that's all I knew. And that was as far as it went, and I didn't know that women were such a crucial part of fighting the war as well. Had no idea.
Well, you know, Queen Elizabeth II, at that time when she was a princess, she was part of the ATS service.
Yeah.
So when we talk about female contribution, it comes from all over.
Yeah.
And that's not spoken about. So I'm glad that you're learning and enjoying. Are you enjoying it? Because we forgot to mention that. Are you enjoying the project?
I've enjoyed it so much, I've joined twice.
Shout out to Queen Liz doing her thing for the Auxiliary Territorial Service. The high school history experience clearly just didn't do it for Tabor. And it didn't do it for me either. University history, though, that's a different ballgame.
In high school, you learn more about the British perspective if you do learn about other countries. Mm-hmm. Here, I'm learning about other countries by themselves. I have module South Asian politics. I'm learning about partition. I'm learning about war, mm-hmm. but not just the war that, you know, that Britain tries to sort of like, oh yeah, like this is our war, this is what we did. But it's more like other wars, other important things that shaped our like yeah. world, shaped our history. I do history and politics, and they're both so intertwined. And I feel like because of this, I'm a lot more knowledgeable about the world.
And knowledge is power. It was thanks to Dr. Nicola Gold's knowledge that Kieran found out about how to apply for national lottery funding. Kieran has always felt like there's a perception that everything she's achieved for Believe in Me, including the funding, came easily. Like all of us, she posts the highlights on social media, so I guess you can't blame anyone for having that perception. It's a classic case of social media versus reality.
I got rejected on the first attempt mm-hmm. for my second project. I cried so much because I felt like I put everything in and I let the people down.
Yeah. When Kieran got rejected, she didn't tell anyone.
Oh God, yeah. And it wasn't even that much money. And I had the business plan. They just said you weren't clear, but I felt like it was a rejection.
Planned dates and timelines would change because of it. And Kieran could feel the weight of the disappointment heavy on her shoulders.
And then I was like, oh, should I just give it up? And they're like, no, we're asking you to come back. Like, you can reply, but what you've done is not made things clear. So when you say the research trips, how many, where do you want to take them? Who's going to be leading those sessions? Is it you, an expert? And I think I felt a bit scared, but then when I reapplied, they granted the money and said, you know, this is what we were looking for. But I cried, like, I remember it was December and I was crying. And in January, I had to go and see them for the second project. And in the third project, it was a little bit different.
Yeah.
Is it daunting? Of course, because you never know if you're going to get rejected or not.
Spoiler alert, Kieran didn't get rejected. She got the call at a Spice Girls concert and screamed. I told you she was all about girl power. Kieran's all about doing that little bit extra. So I'm sure it won't surprise you that she dips into her own pockets from time to time to fund other elements of her project.
So even when we get funding, sometimes we run out of money. And that isn't because we've mismanaged money. It's just because we've taken on extra volunteers or young people have said, can we come on board? Mm-hmm. To be brutally honest, I want to help people. I work with young people in care, which I often, you never get to see on my social media because whether they've been involved in county lines or, you know, they're in the care system for other reasons. Mm-hmm. And I remember during the pandemic, I worked with them and they were being moved in from the care system to different city, mm-hmm. different school, different situation. And I was like, oh my God. So, and they were like, but are we still part of the project? And remember in the pandemic, we all change. And I forgot what it means for young people sometimes, or even just people like the young mums group. This is a lifeline for them where English is not your first language. They used to come to the group just to like mix mm-hmm. and have a conversation. Somebody wants to make samosa and say, you know, like Indian food. We just want to make the Indian food and we just want to hear what you're talking about. And then we'll translate what you want us. And for different people in the, you know, volunteers, it's different things. But when you work with young people in care systems, and they always turn up. And when they called me and said, we're being moved, but can we be part of the project? And I was like, of course you can. But you work with local authorities and you're fighting a system that I didn't sign up for. Mm-hmm. I didn't do a social work course. And so I was working in a system where sometimes I get it wrong. Oh, it's going to make me cry. I get it wrong because I don't have the answers. And I only just set out to do a project. Sorry. I just set out to do a project. And they wanted to be a part of it because they're from the South Asian community and we don't look at, you know, people of colour in the care system and how they're treated. And they don't have a family like me and you have families. You know, we mess up and our families come batting for us and saying, you know, let's fight tooth and nail for our child. And when they called me and they said, is it over? And I said, it's not over. It's not over. And then you have to deal with local authorities. And so, yeah, we have to put in our own money sometimes. Because they're like, I can't get the bus fare. And so that was heartbreaking. And so I said to them, take a break. You've got my number. You've got my email. And when you can get a connection, always just connect back.
and don't worry about anything. We'll put you back in the project. You'll be able to come and see the launch or however you want to be involved. But we need to sort you out first. Reality is, half the time I'm fighting with local authorities. Or I'm helping young people because the universities are not helping them. Or I'm helping people all the time. And I didn't know that was my job. Not that I complain about it.
Yeah.
But if they don't have anybody else, I'd rather they speak to me.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me what trouble they're in so I can use my contacts to get them help, whether even that's bus money or, you know, student grant or, you know, I'm having problems like that. But it just made me think that without this project, I wouldn't be exposed to young people because sometimes I live in my own bubble. Like, this is a project you enjoy because they don't complain.
Yeah.
And prior to the pandemic, I never ever had a call saying, are you going to kick me off the project? And I was like, well, why would I? They were, because we're not here. And after you turn 18, the law has changed now, but you have to get out of care system and find somewhere else to live.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got no parents, no money, no support, social workers come in. But for young people who are shy or vulnerable, where are they going to go?
Yeah.
And they said, well, we need to find a place to live. And so you're like, oh, I don't know that area. But, you know, you become an expert in stuff. But, it, you know, as dark as it gets, them just reaching out, and I always say, are you okay? And sometimes they email me and say, we're okay, but you're not going to see us till August. I'm like, okay, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're alive, you're safe, and you're doing you. That's the challenging part, and that's why I do this. And I'm lucky to have the friends that I have that can keep you confidential and are trained, and they help. And they were like, actually, I work in the council,
mm-hmm.
and I know what department you need to call. And I was like, get onto it. Why are you telling me? It should have been done yesterday. But if I do go into a next project, this is something that I would consider putting in as a contingency, because we had 15 new volunteers that I didn't expect that all needed different needs, mm-hmm. but want to be part of the project to learn. So that's the behind the scenes.
I feel like believing me is morphing into something else again.
Yeah.
Like, it's just taking another path down the road. A major key,
shout out to DJ Khaled,
in Believe in Me is being involved with school, but it's limited to after school activities. And when that school bell rings, the last place some of us want to be is in school. We need some more girls in here being the history sector. Do you know why? Because there's too many men, just like we need more diversity on the curriculum.
Schools are trying to teach it,
mm-hmm.
but they're limited on what they can teach because they don't know everything. That's why working with our organisations, we work with schools. We create learning packs and resource packs that's also aimed at community members. We ask schools, here you go. You know you can teach this.
Yeah.
They just need a little confidence in that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I step in and say, this is what you need to do and this is it. And students are crying out for this. Somebody up above in the government needs to change something.
So you think it's a step above, not just the schools, but a step above?
Because schools are
trying.
More inner city schools in low income areas are really pushing and putting their foot on the pedal for this. They're wanting change.
Mm-hmm.
And I've worked with teachers, and we weren't in 47 schools for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in them 47, they were pushing for change, but unfortunately their hands are tied.
Yeah.
And so this is why it was a lifeline for working with me on these projects to delve into these histories.
Mm-hmm.
And so, upstairs can do so much more. Let's see where the time comes.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully it will. What do you think it would have been like if you had been taught the kind of history that you work on in school? How would it have affected, like, your identity as well?
I don't think I would have been that interested as I am now. because they don't take you to the archives, do they, at school?
No.
You just get taught what the teacher tells you from a textbook.
Yeah, I would have loved that.
And then to have experts teach us, that would have been perfect. But we didn't. And how does it change my identity? I think now I'm more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk about South Asian contribution without being ashamed. And I'm proud of who I am, and I'm proud of my community and my heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me stand tall. And like, we're coming with these histories.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I didn't have that education, I wouldn't be the person I am. Mm-hmm. So it's educated me more.
If there's one thing that's been around on this project since day one, apart from Kieran, it's change. The changes in our own life, the changes for the people she's worked with, and the changes in the way that South Asian history is discussed.
the historians that I work with now, their whole entire aim is not to gatekeep. We're changing. The way history is being taught is changing. And I don't think lecturers have got used to that.
Karen didn't like teaching the first time she did it. But with Believe in Me being in 57 schools up and down the country before COVID, I think you can say she's into it now.
You know, I was quite young. I went off to university and I didn't know what I was going to do with an English literature degree. Mm-hmm. And then somebody said, my lecturer said, oh, teaching. And because they were giving money at the end of it and they were paying for everything, I was like, oh, let's go.
Yeah.
But you don't think about these things because we were young. I was young and dumb.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I remember I'm the first to go into university from my family.
Yeah.
I couldn't ask my mother something. I couldn't ask my, you know, my grandmother something. She wouldn't know. Mm-hmm. And they wanted me to have a job security. But when I went there, it was so much. It's not that I did not like teaching young people because I was a secondary school teacher.
Yeah.
I just didn't like the red tape. After that, I went into being a sexual health advisor. We worked with gangs and we worked with young people, vulnerable young people. We worked with young mothers groups. So it wasn't just about sexual health. We were actually doing educational programs. And there, I mean, once you've met gang members, it opens your mind to different people. So it was a whole different conversation. And you understand it's like how you're brought up and your surroundings. And they taught me a lot.
Karen couldn't ask her mum or grandma for advice about uni. But she's become the go-to person for advice for the young people that she works with, including Tabor. And now that Karen's cool with being a teacher, she might need to make some space for a new identity. Because Tabor doesn't see her as an educator.
I don't see Karen as a teacher. I'm sorry if you thought that was it. But like, I don't, because I'm the oldest child, I don't have an older sister. And so when I see Karen, she's doing history and she's someone I can connect with. And she's always been so informal. She's like, listen, just call me if, like, you know, you have any problems or you need anything. When I first did history, I was like, okay, I'm panicking. I'm doing a degree. I don't have any experience. I was like, okay, let me call her. So I was like, Karen, do you have projects going on? And she's like, okay, I'm actually doing a project right now. I was like, can I volunteer? And she's like, oh my gosh, come along. And I can literally call her whenever. And she's like, okay, I'm here for you. Don't worry, I'll help you.
Yeah.
And she's so because of that, I feel like there's no like formalness between us two. It's more like I can speak to her whenever, even if some dumb stuff, I can just call her.
I mean, I thought I was a teacher. That's where I wanted it, and that's where I wanted it to end.
That line ended.
Tabor used to be so quiet that Karen couldn't tell if she was into the project or not. But over time, something changed. Tabor stepped out of her own way and her confidence grew. Actually, the reason why she's up for volunteering now at our university is because Karen believed in her.
I mean, back then I was like, oh, like, I wouldn't even like venture out in like town or something. I'm going out a lot. And then next thing you know, Karen's like, okay, we're going to go London. And I was like, I've never been to London. And then she's like, you know, Brighton. And then we're going here, I'm going there. And I was like, normally I'd just be at home. I'd be on my phone. I'd just be watching Netflix. And then next thing you know, I'm visiting all these places, which I'll be honest, I never would have visited.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't even aware of half the stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I did like a BBC interview with my dad about changing my degree to history. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, I'm doing all these, I'm doing a podcast, and it's like my confidence is slowly getting higher and higher. And, you know, I'm speaking to my friends, my lecturers, just everyone about this, and they're so interested, and I feel like it's definitely improved, you know, everything for me.
Believe in Me has sparked conversations about family histories that probably wouldn't have happened without it. And those conversations have led to some major discoveries.
Because after I'd come back from projects, I speak about to my mum and I'd be like, oh, like, we learn about, like, you know, Muslim, like, contribution. Mm-hmm. And then she'd be like, oh, you know, your, like, granddad was part of the Pakistani Navy. And my granddad passed away before I was born. And then we never used to speak about him. And the next year, mum's, like, opening up to him. And she's like, yeah, that's how we came to the country. I'm like,
hey, like, why do families do that? You'll be like, right, okay, now I've got an interest. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, this is what happened. It's like, why are you telling me this now?
Why do students do that? She didn't tell me this until we launched. So she's been hanging on to this information since 2018. She didn't bother telling me since end of 2020 when we had the first pandemic. She said, oh, yeah, by the way, you know, I've got a family connection. So, like, what's happening?
If, like me, you're from a minority group and you want to know more about your own history, you need to forget about Google. You don't even need to take a step out of your front door. Unless you don't live with your family. In that case, just get a bus, train, plane, or whatever you need to get to their house.
you know, number one, speak to your family. I feel like I never spoke to my mom about this. And, you know, you can't just be like, what happened in the past? Like, you know, how did we get to this country? Like, how did we come here? Because my granddad wasn't alive. I spoke to my mom.
Yeah.
But then it's like, just speak to your parents, speak through there, maybe in your attic or maybe somewhere. Like, I didn't realize we had medals of my granddad stored away. My grandparents, I was like, oh my God, when did we have this? So for me, it's like, if you can't find it on the internet or anything, your family is the best connection that you could have if you could speak to them.
Use your network as well and demand answers, and MPs in your areas and councillors, they're ready to help as well. So it might be worth, you know, speaking to them, saying, you know, we got this community group, we're interested in this, can you help us? Even if it's not funding, the stories, and talk to your neighbours, because so much history comes out from the people that we live near. That should be their first protocol, and then go to the archives and then do all this and go on the magical trip. Yeah.
We're all either stressed or obsessed about our futures. And I'd like to think that Tabor's obsessed with hers.
I'd love to, you know, be a little Kieran. I'd like to either work with like little community or in the museum or sort of history heritage section. And so, you know, I've got my placement. So I guess that's why I'm trying to get more and more experience. And, you know, I have all these complaints about the curriculum and I'm like, okay, well, you know, change it then. If you have so much. So I just want to, you know, get more involved.
Would you believe me if I told you that sometimes Kieran's imposter syndrome as a woman in history gets so bad that she has to remind herself that her charity is called Believe in Me. So she needs to believe in herself. Sometimes she pinches herself when she thinks about being asked to speak at Oxford or working with the armed forces.
I think it's opened doors. I've been to places that is never even accessed to the public before. And it's Kieran Sahota coming in that space. And I never see myself in that space. You know, invitations come. Do you want to see this exhibition? Do you know who's going to be? And I don't mean it for the celebrity purpose. I mean, I never thought this day would come because I never set out. Like I said in the beginning, I thought we were going to have one exhibition and then we were going to disappear. To still be in this space and then seen now as a professional, to stand next to other historians on a stage.
Yeah.
And they say now our keynote speaker is Kieran Sahota. I never thought this day would come. And I think sometimes my friends look at me and think, is it still a joke? You know, I run around Sandhurst.
Yeah.
And if you think about, and I say that to people, for them to open their doors and say, what more do you want? Or like National Army Museum during the pandemic, I was in museums while it was shut. And to come in to get private tours, to look at their archive that no one's seen before or no one's taken an interest, to have that is everything. Because at one time back in 2015, this was not even possible.
It's hard for Kieran to believe how far she's come. And the thing is, she's not done yet. Indian Women in War is on a mission to reach wider audiences and launches this summer. And you know how Beyoncé took a little break and then came back with Lemonade? Kieran's calling this her Beyoncé album. This is Kieran Sahota's Lemonade. She does want to see some changes, though.
I don't want anything to be closed.
Yeah.
And just because you're an expert, I don't want you to hide behind your office. People get annoyed because I was like, oh, you're going to have to talk to my young people, or you're going to have to talk to my community group. They're like, no, no, Kieran, you do that. No, why should I do it? I want you to talk. And I want the future to be more accessible, because with the pandemic, it's shutting a lot of things down. So to even get to an archive, you're very lucky. And we should be sharing more and we could be doing more. And what's different about my organisation is, I said, well, why are we not talking? So I pulled people in from the army. Why are you not talking? And I know they get annoyed. Why are you doing this to me?
To, I like, stay. Collaborate.
Yeah. And it's the authority in your voice. It changed from me going from, I kind of want to, can I please? To like, no, it's going to happen.
This is what's going to happen.
But because you're a woman, it's taken a different way. And I think I want the future to be like, why can't we be assertive? And why can't we say, yes, we want that project. And yes, we want that archive. And how much are you charging for an image? You must be having a joke. Go back to bed. And do you know what I mean? All that.
Have the confidence, I would say.
And also take that space. Like, I never see a man apologising because he doesn't know about history, yet we're whispering in museum halls going, I didn't know that. I was like, why are you whispering?
Yeah.
And we don't have female lineups. I changed that. I was like, well, why am I only getting 10 minutes? And the male's getting 20 minutes. So the future should be like that. And I want young people on the project to see we can be in that space as well.
Whether you're in your teens, 20s, or beyond, you're always on a journey to figure out who you are. And sometimes while you're on that journey, you just need to believe in yourself. Even if you're a dreamer, even if something seems impossible, and you don't see people who look like you being represented in that area. It worked for Kanye, or should I say Ye? And it worked for Kiran Sohota. Believe in Me is making people see themselves in ways they haven't been able to before, thanks to the players. The National Lottery players, who raise £30 million a week for good causes. And that's where amazing starts.